Long ago, seven Dragon Balls were forged and scattered over the face of the planet. Once united, the Eternal Dragon will be called forth to grant the Discoverer a single wish.
Hello friends, romans, countrymans, welcome back to Destructo Discourse Origins. This is a Dragon Ball original rewatch podcast. We're going back to the very, very beginning. I'm your host, Jason, and joining me this week on the Discourse is Melissa.
It's not a butt.
And Theo.
This soup is bitter.
And Tyler.
Just when I thought I was out. You dragged me back in, Jason.
You know we're all about dragging you back in.
Gotta heed the call.
They call it Dragon Ball.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta heed the call.
You gotta.
Dragon Tyler.
We're here to walk the dragon, we're here to talk the dragon, we're here to explore a world in which the Dragon Balls actually mean something. For once.
For a little bit.
For at least a little bit of a time. And also when Goku is not, like, the most powerful being in the universe. So far he has been, but, like, he's going to actually have challenges for once. And it's going to be so exciting.
He's not going to wear pants fairly frequently.
For like 90% of it.
He's going to be so nude all the time. I specifically marked in, like, we are 6 episodes in and Goku is stripping. All right. So I guess before we get into it, let's do a quick primer, because I have not read or watched, like, much of Dragon Ball at all. Most of my knowledge is osmosis, like, wiki browsing, some clips on YouTube. I don't really know how things are strung together. I've watched, like, the first 10 episodes, I guess. That's about it. Tell me your dragon origins.
Literally all I've seen of Dragon Ball is what they showed us in Dragon Ball Z.
You know, you're right.
But I do have a little Bulma, a little mini cute Posket Bulma.
Ooh.
In that's Dragon Ball version, where she has her little radar and her little pink dress, and she's very cute
with her name on it.
And yes, and she's staring at me right now.
That's how you know it's her dress.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why, like, Vegeta's pink shirt has Bad Man on it. Is it supposed to be like a call and response to the Bulma shirt?
Yeah.
I think so.
It's his name.
It's the same kind of font in, mm-hmm, like, you know, black on white on pink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I saw scattered episodes on TV when we visited my grandparents' house, because they had whatever channel it was on, and I remember, mm-hmm, thinking that Bulma was really cool and pretty. And I did read all of Dragon Ball in middle school, and I don't remember very much of that except for completely losing interest with Dragon Ball Z.
Ah, gotcha.
It is a very different show.
Mm-hmm.
Although I loved Dragon Ball Z when I watched the show with you all.
Mm-hmm.
I started with Dragon Ball Z, obviously,
mm-hmm,
on Toonami, and then found, as we'll talk about, a VHS of the, like, first couple episodes that Funimation did in, like, 1995 as, like,
yeah,
a trial run dub.
Yeah.
That didn't really go very far. They ended up doing just the first 13 episodes and a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I had seen that, and then my only other experience with Dragon Ball until I eventually read it someday was getting a friend in middle school to steal copies of it from the Japanese library in Boston and sell them to me.
You were part of that underground VHS trade.
No, the manga specifically.
Oh, manga.
He
gotcha.
Stole them from a library and then sold them to me. You.
Yes. So he was making pure profit.
There. Yeah.
That's wild. A manga black market. Wait, what year was this?
Probably like 02 or 03.
Mm. The Barnes and Nobles were neither Barnes nor Noble.
No, they were.
Oh.
But I wanted the Japanese copies, Jason, that I could
not
read.
Oh, I see. Gotcha, gotcha.
And could just look at the pictures of.
Ah, I see. Tomes.
Yeah. It's a more pure experience.
Exactly.
You wanted tomes with sigils on them, runes.
Exactly.
And yeah, I looked into it a little bit. I've done a little bit of, like, 2 minutes of wiki research at the very least before starting this. And it turns out that, yeah, they made, like, a couple trial runs.
They were trying real hard.
Of trying to sell Dragon Ball to the Western world.
They knew that it was popular and that it could be very big for them, and they just couldn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah, the first attempt was what was called the Harmony Gold dub. They only did, like, some of the movies and, like, a couple of episodes, and it's called, like, a lost dub because it just tanked. This was back in the 80s. And features as the voice of Goku... one Barbara Goodson, a.k.a. Rita
Repulsa.
Oh,
Emperor Laharl.
Yeah, Emperor Laharl, that's right.
From Disgaea.
Mm-hmm. Yep. As our little Son Goku. And I think she does a pretty good job.
Yeah.
She captures that sprightly kid energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, as you said, there was the 95 dub, which was, like, Funimation's first official crack at it, with some other companies joined in. And they recorded a special version of the dub of the intro song, Maka Fushigi Adventure. They did their own version, which just goes way too hard.
It's a banger.
It fucking slaps.
I'm obsessed with it.
It's that Dragon Ball.
It's why I made it our theme song for Punch Idiots.
Ah, okay. And listeners, I might get the theme song for this version too, because it's just really good.
I do definitely recognize in both the Harmony Gold opening and the Funimation 95 opening that classic 80s, 90s American cartoon opening trope of needing to explain the premise of the show.
Who am I looking at? What is he doing?
Yeah, within the lyrics. What am I watching? Give me a full synopsis.
These are the
Give
balls.
Me the full synopsis. Yeah, full synopsis
scary,
in the opening.
Scary guys around.
Yeah.
Gotta get them.
There's no
the
poetry here. It's just, it's all descriptive.
Every frame of painting.
I think the last line of that Harmony Gold opening was, "See the bad guys fall in the greatest tale of all." That really
Which
just sets it up for you.
With Dragon Ball. It all works out.
Yeah.
Was it... Sorry. I think it's the Funimation one that has the very sudden evil villain vocal.
Oh, that's like...
That's
there's
in
like
Harmony Gold also.
Harmony Gold. There's like a
where
there's like
villain
a
just cuts
guy.
In.
Yeah.
He's like I'm a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like literally made me jump when I was watching
it's
it.
It's straight up like Inspector Gadget where the guy's like, "I'll get you,
right.
Goku."
Son Goku.
It's got that Hugh energy to it. So I know very little about the original manga. I do know that the prototype for Dragon Ball was like a one-shot called Dragon Boy, which features some similar elements as well as hemming and hawing while I pull up the wiki that I had 2 seconds ago. Dragon Boy with the protagonist named Tong Tong. And he was raised alone with a master and is curious about stuff. and he doesn't really, he's kind of naive, but he's probably very strong. And then there's another one, which was a one-shot manga called The Adventures of Tonpu. And it shows a guy kind of like running around with like a Bulma analog. And also, I think it's the pretty much like the advent of like capsules where where that idea came from.
Mr. Toriyama really just chiseling away at that name with like a hammer and nail to get to Goku. Mm-hmm.
Tongpu, go, And I know also that all of Dragon Ball, or at least a good chunk of Dragon Ball, is vaguely analogous to the Chinese mythological folktale Journey to the West, starring Son Wukong.
The first arc is.
Okay.
That's
Alright. I don't know shit about Journey to the West. Tyler, you've hosted some storytelling moments over at What the Folklore focusing on Journey to the West, so maybe you can enlighten us as to some differences if and when they ever come up. It sounds like it started one way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just know there's a desert bandit and a pig man and a monkey king.
And a Buddhist priest that is now Bulma.
Oh, really? The Buddhist priest is Bulma?
Yeah. So the first major difference is that in the Journey West, what they're doing is traveling west to fetch the Buddhist scriptures to bring them back to China.
Okay.
And in Dragon Ball, instead, what they're doing is journeying to find Bulma a boyfriend.
Hmm. That's like the Buddhist scripts. Sure. And why not?
To a man. Chapter one.
But you have to look into what she's giving up for that boyfriend.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Strawberries.
So without further ado, I say let's get into it. Let's crack open this Makbakafushigi adventure.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of, I just did briefly want to say.
Please.
I love that song. Maybe more than Head Chala, personally.
Yeah, it fucking slaps. It opens up with this fucking, like, fat fucking prog bass line. And if only Matt
it's
were
extremely
here,
funky.
He could help us define that prog. But he is not, so that prog remains undefined to me.
Sadly.
Yeah. And it fucking slaps.
Yeah, when I'm watching this show, I find it extremely difficult to ever skip that intro. With Dragon Ball, I can skip it every once in a while. It's fine. I'm not missing much.
Yeah.
For DBZ, I mean. Chala Head Chala.
Yeah,
how many openings does Dragon Ball have? Does it just have the one?
I think it just has the one.
Just this, I think. Yeah. I think this is all we get.
A rarity.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the ending?
I think
it has more than one ending. I don't remember, though.
Ooh. It's exciting. I love new tunes. They followed it up with in DBZ with two openings, and in Dragon Ball GT with four.
Yeah. Well, they gotta keep you engaged somehow.
I mean, yeah, that's the passage of time, isn't it, though?
Like, yeah.
Now we have One Piece with 24 openings.
Oh,
well,
Jesus.
Yeah, but it's long as hell.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball GT did not deserve
four different openings.
Granted, some of them were good, but... All right. Let's start at the beginning. Let's start with episode one, shall we?
Sure.
The beginning.
Mm-hmm. Long ago, in a distant land, episode one is titled The Secret of the Dragon Ball.
A thrilling mystery.
Hmm.
The Japanese name roughly translates to Bulma and Son Goku.
Yeah, I like
there
that.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It starts out pretty simple.
There's no pretense.
Yeah. We get some deep narrative monologue about long ago there's this strange land untainted by the march of time, and we get some deer and some waterfalls, and it's all tranquil.
Did anybody recognize the English narrator?
No, wait. Oh, it
sounded familiar.
Wait, is it Kyle Ebert?
It is Captain Ginyu.
Oh.
Whoa.
Oh, shit.
We are hanging out with Captain Ginyu for the next however long it takes us to do this.
I don't mind. He's got a lovely
baritone.
It's
a good narrator voice.
Yeah. Captain Ginyu could do some audiobooks, I think.
Mm-hmm. Since he got turned into a frog, that's how we got that lovely little register.
And we basically learned the premise of there was an old master named Gohan who raised a boy named Goku in the woods, and he's super strong, and the boy now guards his grandfather's priceless possession, the Dragon Ball.
Where did this boy come from? We'll figure that out later.
Yeah. We'll figure that out in a bit.
Oh my goodness.
Turn to disc one on this podcast. We see Goku rolling down a giant, like, log down a mountain pass and smiling at all the animals and going at insane speeds and not really giving a hoot.
He's just doing a happy his little chores. Guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Saying hi to his monkey friends.
Saying hi to his friends, doing his mountain chores. He does some martial arts poses and punches the giant log into perfect firewood-sized chunks.
Makes a little that Jenga he will tower never out use.
Yeah. Never gonna use them. He doesn't know how to cook. His grandpa just told him to get firewood, but he does not possess the capacity to understand what he does with firewood once you get it.
Kind of like a mm-hmm. robot in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you. The camera didn't show it, but if you pan behind his house, it's just like acres and acres of perfectly chopped firewood.
It's a Fern Gully massacre back there.
Oh no. Hexus, no.
San Hexus.
It's like I just watched Fantasia again, and he's basically the broom. He was programmed to get firewood, but yeah. not to stop.
That accounts for his haircut, too. Meanwhile, we cut to the Bulma of the Bulma and Son Goku. I mean, I'm going to try to, like, hold as much future knowledge away from this as I can, but it's kind of impossible, because, like, we know who Bulma is. We know who Oolong is. I'm trying to get myself in the mindset of a young youth opening Shonen Jump for the first time and seeing this mysterious young girl on a future
Who is this
car.
Pig?
Yeah.
Don't talk about Bulma like that.
She's in a totally radical car that says turbo on it to let you know that it is quite fast. Mm-hmm. She pulls out a strange device. It's the Dragon Radar. Because she's on the hunt for something. It's the Dragon Balls.
These are little asterisk-like sub-notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the novel version of this podcast. They're
that we are transcribing.
Yeah, they're a little subscript. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Goku, yeah, editor's note. Goku gets kind of hungry and dons his trusty pole, just a simple red staff, could be anything, and he says goodbye to his grandfather. He addresses, instead of a flesh and blood grandpa, he addresses the four-star Dragon Ball. I guess understanding that the spirit of his grandfather lives on in this sacred treasure.
It's the only thing he gave him to remember him by. Mm-hmm.
And
also, his house.
Yeah.
And his
real estate.
Skills.
Right.
His knack for wood chopping.
Yeah.
Goku enjoys a pre-dinner snack of an apple. Fun little apple snack. Tosses that core, which bonks onto the head of an angry saber-toothed tiger. Rawr, oh no!
He does mention, at least in the Japanese version, that the last thing he ate was a bear. And
that's new.
So he's wondering what he shall have tonight, and decides on some apples, which, you know, balance that diet.
Yeah, you gotta balance that out.
Yeah.
Roughage. I've never had bear.
Yeah.
I've only, like, thought that bear probably tastes good because I read that one part in the Narnia books where they have bear.
I don't know that part.
They just have bear, and they, like, there's, like, a whole bit of, like, they stored the bear along with apple slices in their pockets or something, and when they cooked the bear, the apple made it taste real good. Anyway.
I just know you're not supposed to eat, like, polar bear liver, I think.
Really?
Because it's got, like, too much vitamin E.
Huh.
I feel like that was, like, a fun fact in a zoo book or something that has just stuck with me into my adulthood.
Yeah.
Listen, I would rather have that
every day
than,
you,
like,
wake up and remind yourself not to eat polar bear liver.
It's a good thing to know. You might be stranded in the polar wildernesses. And you think, oh, pate, but no, too much.
You may find yourself tempted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I,
but
I
remember
mean,
what
I'm
Zoo Book
tempted
said.
By a nice pate.
See, I would rather have that factoid lodged into my head at 3 a.m. than, like, baby bottle pop, baby bottle pop.
How dare you?
Do you want to know what mine
First
is?
First us all.
What's
mine
that?
Is my buddy, my buddy, my buddy, my buddy. Wherever I go.
Oh, I don't think I had that
goes.
One.
And then this kid sister, kid sister, kid sister, kid sister. Yeah.
So
if
yeah,
you want, if you want to know precisely when each of us was watching television,
this is a great litmus test.
I have those commercials preserved on Beta. I'll have you know.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, preserved. Child's Play, and then you zagged on me with on Betamax. Hell yeah,
the superior videotape.
It's superior quality.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
sorry. we're gonna talk about this angry saber-toothed cat charging at Goku, angry that he got bonked with some apple core. But Goku thinks this is a fun game, and they go on a fun little Looney Tunes chase, culminating, in fact, with Goku giving the cat the slip and him doing that sort of, like, Wile E. Coyote cliff thing. He, like, looks down and, ah!
It's almost like Goku does an instant transmission.
It's very kind similar, because
it's a similar effect, yeah.
He reverses his momentum.
Mm-hmm, there's like those like lines
the
that
lines,
he makes
yeah.
when he disappears, but he just grabbed onto a branch.
Maybe he could always do instant transmission, and it's just the Yardrat people like gave him the idea that he could be like conscious about it and go like really long distances.
Yeah, previously he was very localized.
Unlocked his hidden potential.
Just to a tree branch.
I mean, if you fall far enough, you could fall fast enough. You could call it instant transmission.
Transmitted me into the mantle of the earth. Yeah, Goku accidentally tumbles into the ravine himself, but it's okay because he's like, he's fine. Mm-hmm. He takes off his clothes to dry them, and he does a piss.
A wild piss.
It's a wild piss. The original.
A very small bladder.
Yes, very.
And he also dips his monkey-like tail into the water like a fishing pole, which attracts that enormous Palazzo Mountain anime fish that we always see Goku catching lots of.
Mm-hmm.
This started the trend because Goku just rider kicks that fish into oblivion. He's dragging his catch back home when Bulma runs over him with her car.
Whoops.
But it's a funny joke.
Mm-hmm. It's a funny goof and gaff. Because Goku thinks that the car is a scary monster, or like Bulma's part of it, but like hiding in a shell, lifting it up, knocking it over, hitting it with his power pole.
He thinks it's a big monster come to steal his fish.
Yeah, wants that tasty fish.
Mm-hmm.
Goku asks, thinks Bulma is a monster hiding in the shell, and he's like, so are you out of tricks there, monster? And Bulma pops out of the driver's seat, of the overturned car with a Glock.
She's
and just empties and just empties rounds into this child's face.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fine because it's a funny joke.
Thankfully, this does nothing. Hurt like little mosquito bites. Yeah. Bulma assures Goku she is not a monster, she's a human being. And Goku is very confused because he does not understand what girls look like.
Never seen one.
Because never seen one. The only other human he has ever known all his life is his grandpa. But he knows that grandpa said that if you meet a girl, be polite as possible. As polite as possible.
And then Goku proceeds to do so for the next 4 episodes.
Yep. The first very polite thing Goku does is lift up Bulma's skirt to look for a tail, which she does not have.
And there's a weird thing in the there's a lot of differences in the Japanese to the English. Basically, anytime they're talking about the tail, it's usually something different in the Japanese.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But he does wonder if girls don't have tails, maybe.
Yeah.
And then when Bulma does her little laugh and like thinks to herself, she's thinking, I'm like he's really lame. Does he really think that little tail accessory makes him look cool?
he thinks of Goku as like a furry wearing their tail to the the like high school pep rally.
Exactly.
She thinks that she stumbled on a con somewhere.
Yeah.
And just as a quick like preamble heads up for our listeners for the journey ahead to the West, some might say, there's a lot of like panty humor, fart humor, pee humor in Dragon Ball because Toriyama was just wildin' in the 80s.
Yeah.
A lot of it involves like bawdy humor, bawdy humor.
Well, both.
Both. A lot of it also involves Bulma, who's a teenager. So I've kind of filed a lot of the jokes here under a special little bucket I like to call. Yeah, that sucks. Let's move on.
It's a good bucket.
It's a good bucket.
It's a good bucket to have for this show.
Yeah, that's something you gotta keep in mind, because at the same time, I don't want to, like, create and curate a glossed-over, sugar-coated version of Dragon Ball where this kind of problematic humor didn't exist, but I also
that
don't
would be
wanna,
impossible.
Like, that would be physically impossible.
You would be creating a deke dub.
Yeah.
Call up 4 kids, see what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, I also don't want to, like, go on like a deep dive, a rabbit hole. But just there'll be quite a few more in this recording where that sucks. Let's move on.
Acknowledge and move on.
Yeah. AAMO. So Goku and Bulma argue a bit. It's like, hey, why don't you have a tail? It's like, I don't have a tail. I'm a girl. I'm a human. Bulma also shows Goku the wonders of technology by, like, explaining how a car works. Goku invites Bulma up for giant fish lunch, and Bulma marvels at Goku's naivete and childlike innocence. They learn each other's names and get into an argument because Goku thinks Bulma's name sounds funny, and Bulma thinks, well, it's like, well, it's not like Goku.
In Japanese version, Bulma says she doesn't like her name either, which is why she didn't want to tell him.
Oh, I see. Well, then why is it on your
dress then?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she says, I hate kids. And she does use the Japanese word gaki, which is more like brat.
Ooh, scamp. Mm-hmm. Rapscallion.
But yeah, The name on the dress thing feels very much like someone left a label on this character design, and it went through to production.
Oh, God. I love that.
I just love their arguing. It just, they fall so quickly into a sibling-ish relationship. And like,
yeah.
It's so easy and like these sort of like, oh, a boy and a girl go on an adventure together. Oh, and then later they're gonna fall in love. Like, there's no chance of that.
No, not even a little bit.
From
not
the fucking
jump. Not even a hint.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of the arguments are things where like Bulma gets really heated and Goku's just kind of like, yeah, whatever, it's whatever. It's cool.
Yeah.
But like,
hey man, I don't know anything.
The adult in the room, because there's just as many things where like Goku does something ridiculous or inappropriate, and Bulma's like, ha ha ha, what a country fool,
what a bumpkin,
what a mm-hmm. bumpkin. They're both just lil idiots.
Fools guiding fools. That's kind of what I like about this. After commercial, they get to Goku's little house in the woods. And the four-star ball starts to glow. It's resting on a cushion. Bulma's like, whoa! She goes to grab it, and Goku's real mad. It's like, hey!
Hands off my grandpa!
Hands off my grandpa! And then we get a very funny line as Bulma pulls out two of her own Dragon Balls, and Goku says, you got two grandpas! No way! Yeah. Bulma, how come your mom lets you have two grandpas?
A joke good enough that's the same in the English and the Japanese.
Nice.
Ew.
So we learn a couple things. We learn that these are called Dragon Balls. Believe it or not, folks. And they start to glow when the other ones are near them. And I don't know if it's determined whether in this part, whether or not like there are seven of them. But by the time we get through this episode, there are seven of them.
And Bulma found hers in a storeroom in her house.
Oh, that must be a sub only.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it's explained where she found the first two.
What was Dr. Briefs doing?
Yeah, what was he up to?
Well, apparently these things are just lying around everywhere.
What what was he up to and then subsequently forgot he was doing?
Right.
Safekeeping and left the child locks off.
Mm-hmm. We learn that they can make great or terrible things happen, depending on who finds them. We cut to some terrible people who find a Dragon Ball. Here are the villains of our story. It is a little blue gremlin. His name is Emperor Pilaf, and his subordinates, a corgi man, dog ninja. Yeah. He looks like he's fresh out of Samurai Pizza Cats, voice acting and all.
Indeed.
And a lovely young woman with red eyeliner. Her name is Mei, and also the dog's name is Shu.
Fun fact, little difference from the manga.
Tell me.
In this first quote-unquote arc of finding the Dragon Balls, we did not meet these people until the end of it when everyone wound up at their stronghold.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. So for the anime, they have started including them ahead of time, just in like a Team Rockety sort of fashion, so that we get a little more familiar with them.
Okay. I like
that.
In the
manga, it was very much Monster of the Week for quite a while. And these just happened to be the final Monster of the Week.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's a very Monster of the Week-y for the show, at the very least, when it starts out, but I like that they're sort of building some beats that kind of form a through line.
Yeah, I appreciate the Pilaf through line that they included in the anime.
Yeah, so that we're not going, who the fuck are these people? they're in these spooky ruins, and they get a Dragon Ball, and Pilaf is so happy, he's ready to make his wish, but then Mei says, dude, you need all seven of them to summon the dragon. And we learn that Pilaf's wish is he wants to rule the world. We cut back over to Bulma and Goku, and we learn a couple things more about the Dragon Balls. Number one, that very few people in the world actually, like, know about them and what they do. And moreover, Bulma has her own wish, and that is for a boyfriend.
There's a little extra flavor in the Japanese version where she says, it's really hard to give up unlimited strawberries, but...
Those are the two options.
I'm gonna wish for a boyfriend.
Unlimited strawberries.
Yeah, but what if you get sick of strawberries?
Oh, that'll never
impossible.
They're strawberries.
Far you less likely than getting sick of your boyfriend.
Plus, yeah. What if you find a boyfriend who's like really in, like really loves strawberries, or just likes people with cool powers?
Like, the strawberry's not going to get mad and start dating somebody else if you need to take a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can take a break from strawberries whenever you want, mm-hmm. and then when you're ready, like strawberries will be there for you.
That one's going to be much easier for Shenron to monkey's paw, though.
Yeah, that's true. They're always slightly off-season.
He's going to drown the planet in strawberries.
Ooh.
Or you suddenly develop a strawberry allergy.
No!
It's very funny to me that we are told that not a lot of people in the world know about these Dragon Balls, which, like, you could... That's easy enough to believe that they're these mystical... artifacts that not a lot of people know about, but having watched as much of the extended Dragon Ball universe as we have, this planet doesn't know much about anything, really. So
yeah,
that's not that surprising to hear.
I think this planet is like on autopilot. They're just kind of like RPG NPCs doing village things and doing Harvest Moon stuff.
Geometry.
Just yeah. Driving trucks full of paper clips to and fro.
It's almost like the planet's guardian split himself into two parts and got distracted.
Bulma attempts to finagle the four-star ball away from Goku, and does so by trying to seduce Goku's asexual ass, trading a Dragon Ball for quote-unquote a little peek. As she lifts up the hem of her skirt. Gross, comma, but we also get a very funny line from Goku, who's just like, what do I care about your dirty old fanny?
How does he know about fannies?
The Japanese version, she says she'll let him touch it. He's like, I don't want to touch your dirty butt.
He's a practical young lad. So Bulma instead comes up with a new idea. How about we just go and find the Dragon Balls together and travel the world and perhaps journey to the west?
Roughly here. That direction.
It happens here. Mm-hmm. Future Bulma was right. This is all Bulma's fault.
Yep.
Bulma lays a seed here in Goku's mind that will sustain this franchise for decades. In the Japanese version, Bulma says to Goku, it's your duty as a man to go to various places and train yourself.
Oh.
Well,
and so
shit.
It begins.
Traffic, but also so sweet.
And so it begins.
It's like watching the birth of like the tale of Orpheus and Eurydice. It's like, oh, we know how this ends. It's a sad song, but we sing it anyway.
And so Goku drops his firewood, having received a new command.
Never to pick it up again.
Head empty, Christ. Only train.
Goku is super down with this idea. And Bulma points out on the Dragon Radar that the closest ball is in fact 750 miles... to the west.
It's all in kilometers in the Japanese version.
Well, fine. Sense.
Translator's note.
Yeah. And we also here get the other staple of the Dragon Ball franchise, the capsules, or dino caps, as they're sometimes called.
Mm-hmm. Hoi poi in the Japanese.
Hoi poi caps.
I don't know why they went with dino.
Yeah, I don't know. It's for the record, though, it is spelled D-Y-N-O, as in,
dynamo.
Dynamic, yeah.
I was also confused before I put on the subtitles, thinking, like, dinosaur capsules?
Dinosaurs?
That sounds
cool.
There are
dinosaurs around.
Yeah.
They could probably put a dinosaur in one of them.
Oh,
maybe
no,
that's how
probably.
They got invented. For, like, storing your pet dinosaur, and then somebody realized, you know what? There's probably more useful things to do with these.
You know what? There's a franchise
in
here somewhere. We can take these monsters, and put them in our pocket.
Oh.
Hmm. No, that's nothing. Alright, let's just use it for motorcycles.
Hell yeah.
We get like a cool Jetson car and stuff. Actually, it's like a little like domed motorbike thing. I'm kind of into it. You mentioned long ago in early Destructo Discourse that Toriyama has a thing for like drawing cool intricate machines
mm-hmm.
that look very believable in the world that they
with or without context.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for the love of it.
Just loves some cool machines, and that definitely comes through here in any of like the bike scenes. They go soaring off into the horizon. And Bulma does some sweet flips. Also, she's got to use the bathroom. They take a quick pit stop. Goku doesn't understand why Bulma demands that Goku not come by and watch.
Mm-hmm. Why can't she just pee right here?
Mm-hmm. And Bulma instead calls for help after being grabbed by a scary pterodactyl monster. And Goku's like, why can't she make up her mind?
Jeff meets Frisian. He says, what's wrong? Did a snake bite your wiener?
Well,
spoken from experience, I imagine.
Listen, in the woods, that's a lesson you need to learn precisely once. So Bulma is screaming as she is being carried off by a pterodactyl. Who also can talk.
Who speaks the Queen's English.
Really, yeah. The Dog King's English.
Or the Emperor's Japanese, if you're listening to the original.
Yes. And also confirms, at least in the dub, the existence of Albert Einstein. And in fact, I think Bulma does the same thing a couple episodes later. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a Dragon Ball Einstein somewhere. Probably works at, like, Capsule Corp's, like, R&D or something. Anywho. Goku gives chase on Bulma's capsule bike and does a sweet ramp to try and fly up and catch him. But he can't quite make it. So instead, he takes out the power pole, which extends. And he does that by saying, power pole extend.
This is some really great problem solving for Goku. You know, it's not all... Later on, he falls into just punching his problems. But, like, he's able to figure out a complicated machine.
Currently, he has no beams, and therefore needs to use his brain.
Yeah, wow. It's definitely a different dragon world.
I have no beams, and I must brain.
He brings down the power pole as hard as he can... shattering the pterodactyl's like head crest, and both it and Bulma and Goku go tumbling towards the ground. Goku hurls his power pole over to Bulma, which like snags Bulma's clothes, like her sleeve, and it impales on a cliffside, leaving her dangling for her sheer life and doing a terapy. Off of the cliff.
This was unnecessary.
What an auspicious opening to this grand adventure. You can imagine reading this in Shonen Jump and thinking, yes, I'll read this again next week.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's literally how episode one ends, with like Goku like laughing at the goofiness of the situation and the narrator talking about, whoa, these strange duo.
These two weirdo kids.
Mm-hmm. And we get the original Dragon Ball closing, which you, dear listeners, have been hearing every time we've been reading off a horoscope on Destructive Discourse. It's called Romantic Ageruyo. And I love it. The credits is fun, and it's mostly just a way to showcase cool Toriyama illustrations.
It feels designed to be a karaoke song. To me.
It's very that.
Mm-hmm. It's got that rain on the window feeling. Bulma being wistful.
Mm-hmm. Wistful in a complicated cockpit that Toriyama had no small joy in drawing every little button and dial. Any lingering thoughts for episode one?
We're in it now.
Get ready.
Episode two of Dragon Ball is The Emperor's Quest.
The Japanese title roughly translates to, what the? No balls!
You sound disappointed in that.
It's just, you know, we'll just put it in the bucket.
It's body. We open up with Goku and Bulma riding off into the sunset, discussing their dinner plans. Goku would like snakes or frogs or a lizard or something. And Bulma's like, no, ew, gross.
I do like that she says, you just gotta toughen up and not eat those gross things, Goku.
You gotta toughen up and have some charcuterie. They find a nice spot to camp, and Bulma throws a capsule, which poofs into a whole-ass house.
Goku's ready to protect her from this new monster.
Sudden monster. Get away from its mouth. The front door. We learn about electricity, or at least Goku does. They have some, like, fun television antics. And I think it's really great, because it definitely cements the, like, wiser older sister, brat kid brother, like, like chemistry.
There's no mom here to say whose turn it is with the remote.
Bulma says, Goku, you need a bath. You smell terrible.
You smell like a kid who's never had a bath before.
And Goku replies, what's a bath?
I mean, he does go jump in the river from time to time.
He rinses.
He rinses. But he doesn't exfoliate.
He doesn't lather.
You need soap.
Yes.
I
blame Grandpa Gohan for this.
Yeah. You need conditioning.
What this tells me is that Grandpa Gohan didn't bathe either. And that's more concerning.
No. Just no musty, wonder he was dusty, and crusty 24/7.
I appreciate, like, evidence that, like, Goku learns things, because we've seen adult Goku taking a bath without being scolded into doing so.
Yeah, he loves them now.
He enjoys it. He loves a roaring hot fire under a metal barrel. that's that can of Son Goku soup special.
Ew.
I'm cutting that out.
Son Ghostu.
Now I can't cut it out.
No, you can't cut it out.
Yeah, that was my plan. This is my ultimatum, Jason.
Monster! Bulma is freaked out when he finds that Goku's tail is in fact not some cosplay sewn into his pants, but in fact is attached to his butt and is fully functional.
Prehensile.
Grabs the scrub brush and everything.
I love her reaction, because, like, it's not just like, wow, his body's different from mine, but it, like, she goes into a full think on it of, like, wait, is this a normal thing for
it
boys?
Is an existential crisis.
It's really good.
Do I not know about boys as much as I thought?
It might just be something I don't know yet.
I think that's beautiful.
It feels so young and precious.
It does, yeah.
Because, like, after having all this time with Bulma kind of being the Virgil here, having to be the guy to everything under the sun, and then Goku's just like, well, girls just don't have tails, and then have her for once be on the back foot, like, do boys have tails all this time?
Yeah.
And it does a nice job of balancing, like, a little bit of the feeling of, like, boys are the normal body and girls are the weird body. Like, no, everybody's confused about bodies.
Yeah, bodies are weird.
It's all fucked up.
Most of all, Akira Toriyama. We cut to Pilaf's palace, where Shu was sent out for a Dragon Ball but came back empty-handed. And he's real mad about it. Pilaf starts monologuing about ruling the world when he suddenly just rips a big old fart. And what do you do when you rip a big old fart? You blame it on the dog.
Like, Nobody would have known, Pilaf. You're on the other side of the room. You're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, he demands that Shu confess to his fart crimes by hitting a button that makes a bunch of mechanical hands pick up and grab Shu.
And that button's in a convenient place, right?
Yeah.
On the other side of the room.
He just, everybody takes a second for
it's the best part of the episode.
To run across the room.
Just a little man hopping over. And then he pulls out a chainsaw, which I thought was a nice touch. And
he's serious about these fart crimes.
He is, and Shu confesses.
Who hurt you, Emperor Pilaf?
And the English Pilaf is much more forgiving than Japanese Pilaf.
Really?
Because in English, he's like, well, I'll let it go this one time. Or whatever, I forget exactly what he says. And in the Japanese, he says, I was going to, like, shred you to pieces, but because you're honest, I'll turn you into food instead.
That doesn't preclude the first thing.
Yeah.
I've done that with many a chicken breast.
May drops in from a tile in the ceiling with some very important intel. A spy plane found a mysterious glow deep within a place called Skull Valley, but it was never seen again. The plane, I mean. Pilaf sends Shu and Mai to investigate, and then we're back with our heroes, where Goku complains that this soup is too bitter. He's drinking coffee.
Can we back up for a minute?
Yes, please.
I know it goes in the bucket. However, there are aspects to the Japanese version of the bathtub scene.
What's going in the
bucket? With Bulma that I find very amusing.
Sure.
In the English, it's pretty straightforward that Goku is there offering to scrub Bulma's back because she...
Offered the same.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention this.
And then Goku tells her that she doesn't have to be ashamed of not having a tail, and then she gets mad and kicks him out.
Yeah, hurls a bunch of bath supplies at him.
If I may.
You may.
It starts the same in the Japanese. Goku came to help because she helped him, and looks at Bulma as she is with, you know, suds covering...
just enough.
Yeah, covering enough. And Goku says, girls sure are weird. You have butts up here, too? And points to his chest.
From the manga, yeah.
Yeah. And Bulma pulls a baka and says, it's not a butt, they're bosoms. Babies like them. And boys, too. And Goku says, I don't like your butt. And Bulma says, I just told you it's not a butt. And besides, it's 10 years too early for a little kid like you to be interested in these things. Goku says, I'm not a little kid. And Bulma says, oh, really? How old are you then? Goku says, 14. And that's when Bulma freaks out and kicks him out of the bathroom.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I forgot how old Goku actually is when this starts.
Yeah, that's not a factoid that we get in the English for quite a while.
Yeah. He is... I think they're hoping that you just... forget.
Ignore it.
Yeah.
We forget that Goku is a short king at the very beginning. Because he's quite minuscule.
I just like the idea that Goku looked at her chest and thought it was a butt.
I like that.
That amuses me.
That's very fun.
My favorite part of the bath scene is that whenever Bulma is talking in the bathtub, the bubbles are synced to her mouth for some reason.
Wait, really?
Yeah, oh. The animation, when she stops talking, the bubbles stop animating also. So it was all just one layer.
That's pretty funny.
Why would you do it that way?
Oh, God. That stresses me out.
Yeah.
The 80s was a wild time in many ways.
Just draw everything on one sheet of paper, I guess.
So we're back with our heroes. Goku does not like the coffee or any of, like, the bread. And he runs out to score some more hearty eats. And he sees, after grabbing a yummy nightcrawler, he sees a delicious bird flying overhead. seems it's to be so made shiny. Out of metal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We cut to Shu and Mai landing in Skull Valley, and it's it's full of bones! Very spooky.
I love how Mai, like, comforts Shu. I like Shu a lot. He's just a sweet little corgi man. Before leaving, he says he has obedience school to get to. He's like, I like this little dog.
Both of them deserve better.
How they got into this mess, even. They see a spooky glow, a red glow in the distance, and go to investigate, thinking it might be a Dragon Ball. But Goku runs into Shu and Mai, wanting that plane for dinner. I saw it first. Hands off.
Goku, they're right here. They probably saw it too.
Yeah. But this conflict is dissipated by us learning that the spooky glow that I must reiterate was seen from a spy plane.
Yep.
Is actually the collective angry glowing eyes of several anime wolves. What is the fauna doing here?
Again, it was the 80s. Spy plane tech has come a long way.
At night at Dragon World, you can just see where the city lights stop and the wolf lights start. It's like, where are we landing? Oh, not there. That's wolf lights. Goku beats up all of these anime wolves. And the plane takes off, and Goku chases after it with his power pole, and Rider kicks it into a forest where it explodes.
It's a self-cooking chicken.
All right. It's got the spices right in there. Goku brings home his hunter's quarry to Bulma, who freaks out when she sees that Goku has brought A, centipede, and B, a dead anime wolf hanging at the end of his power pole.
It's a scrawny wolf. It's all fur and bones.
Very gamey. Goku fucking Monster Hunter cooks that anime wolf right over a spit and eats it down to the bones.
Gross.
Yeah, it's not great.
A lot of viscera in there.
Yep. Nothing but bones left. I'm wondering, like, if you would... I wonder if you cook... It has to be something bigger, like a T-Rex. Like, this has to be the kind of land where big anime meat with the bone in it comes from, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's gotta be a T-Rex tail steak. maybe not from these scrawny little anime wolves like this, but over here we've got the kind of megafauna that could support that.
Triceratops thigh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's also some continued banter, where Goku thinks Bulma's upset that she doesn't have a tail.
Oh.
It's a good continuing bit.
No.
No?
tell me more.
Like I told you.
What's going
you,
on in
talking,
the land of the rising sun?
If they're talking about the tail, it's probably...
Are we talking about Bulma's upper butt again?
Well, so they talk about kind of Goku's origin, I guess, the little that we know at this point.
Yeah, Goku says that Grandpa Gohan found him on a mountainside one day as a little baby and raised him up.
He's so happy telling this story.
Yes, and in the Japanese version, Bulma says, "You were probably abandoned because you had a tail. You sure are cheerful despite having such a depressing past." And Goku, with his cheerful face, says, "Were you abandoned because your chest is a butt?"
Now there's a supervillain origin story. And in the dub, Bulma says, "I don't know what planet this kid's from, but it's definitely not Earth."
She called it.
Foreshadowing.
I guess that's an X mark? Taking a call back from our sister show Piecemeal. Mm-hmm.
I'll remind you that Funimation did dub this after Dragon Ball Z, so that was probably deliberately put there.
So it's gotcha. A Z-mark.
Yeah. Z-mark. A Z-mark. I like that. Night falls. They go to bed. and it's time for, like, gross Bulma thing number 12, where Goku, in the morning, so Goku was made to sleep on the floor, because Bulma gets the cushy bed.
Yeah, before they went to bed, Japanese Goku was reminiscing about how he used to fall asleep with his head in his grandpa's lap.
Aww, we didn't get that in the dub.
Yeah, that's where this comes from. Okay. This isn't a completely random act. This is where his head's at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In the morning, Goku's like, "Ha, Bulma was just full of it. This bed can hold two people easy." And he goes to rest his head in Bulma's lap, but notices something strange.
He's learning about bodies.
He's learning, yeah.
And it's not as cushioned as he expected it to be.
He doesn't have an anatomy textbook.
No. And he's like, "Huh, that's weird." And he does what I will now call the Son Goku crotch slap. Which is a running gag that I wish wasn't here, but is. Where Goku thus just kind of... It's in the bucket. Yeah. He just kind of slaps.
I mean, the bucket
crotches.
Is named after this.
Yeah.
This is the honorary bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is it's an open palm. There's no, like, groping happening.
No.
Open palm, raised fingers.
It's just kind of like... Smack.
Pap, pap.
It's just, mm-hmm. Yeah, what's going on? What's happening? Mm-hmm. And he is terrified by what he finds. he shouts, rousing Bulma from her slumber.
Well, he does something first that's important to remember for later.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Almost mm-hmm. forgot. Thank you, Tyler. Let me get to this bullet point.
Yeah.
He also, before he freaks out, he removes Bulma's underwear, which causes him to freak out with what he sees. Mm-hmm. He shouts, rousing Bulma from her sleep, and... Okay, this is gross, but it also gave us a very funny line in the dub.
Mm-hmm.
Goku shouts, "Bulma, your balls are gone!" And Bulma runs out of bed thinking it's the Dragon Balls.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He does add in the Japanese version, "And your pee-pee, too."
No, okay.
So it's confusing that she doesn't seem...
maybe she was out of the room by the time
she started listening at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the Dragon Balls are fine.
I can't believe how far this plot point takes us.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it. I cannot believe that she doesn't notice at any point.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, in the future.
It is untenable. It is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's a Z mark, children, for what's going to be revealed very shortly, is that Bulma officially now is going commando.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot about this until it's brought up again. But here we are.
Well, because anybody else would assume, as the story continues, that she would have replaced them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
She would feel the absence of something.
Yes, that while getting dressed, she would get dressed.
She would
perhaps.
Put on a fresh pair of undies, even mm-hmm. if she was unaware of having lost the first pair. Like,
you don't wear your night undies
during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't spend the second day in the same pair. You just feel gross.
Yeah. Also, I kind of hate the way that they're drawn in this show. They look like diapers.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Bloomers, one might say.
Mm.
That was a unanimous that put a chill in my spine.
Sorry, we're in that bucket headspace of like, yep, I understand that this is a joke, but I wish that the whole joke structure was not happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. We've already asked this before on the show, but what is the opposite of yes and?
No, thank you.
No, thanks.
No,
GG,
bye.
GG, I'm good. A creepy, moaning shadow slinks up to the camp. It's very ominous for all of 2 seconds. Bulma's getting ready for the day. Goku skips having coffee and goes out to exercise. He lifts a big old rock and hugs it to pieces.
This is, again, just very perfect little kid energy of like, I'm gonna go break stuff.
I'm gonna get a big rock.
Bulma's taking too long.
Yeah.
I'm bored. I'm just gonna hit things with a stick.
He tries to lift another big rock, but turns out it's a big old turtle.
Hey.
His name is Turtle. He politely asks for a bucket of salt water to slurp on. And we get a very funny...
I think it's weird.
A very funny exchange in the dub of... aromatic yet full-bodied. And they discuss the vintage of the bucket of salt water.
Where did it come from?
Good seawater. Aromatic yet full-bodied.
Yeah, I think it's an 87.
Nope, 86.
Really? Are you sure about that?
Mm-hmm. I know my water.
That's an English dub original, kids.
Was it not salt water in the original?
No, it's salt water. He also mentions if you want to include any seaweed, that would also be appreciated. But there's no commentary during the drinking.
Yeah,
I imagine that she had to create the salt water.
Yeah, they're not by the sea.
Yeah.
So that makes the vintage even stranger of a conversation, because the vintage is seconds ago when I made it in this bucket.
Yeah.
The tone of the conversation made me feel like it was a joke that they were playing
right
off of each other.
They're just bantering with each other.
Yeah.
Developing a rapport.
Yeah. With this strange turtle. We learn his story. He's lost. He's looking for the sea.
And has been for a number of years.
Very long time. Goku, or Bulma pulls out a map and points out that they're like about 100 or so miles away from the coast. And Goku wants to carry the turtle all the way to the sea, but Bulma doesn't, and there's some back and forth.
What do you remember what she says in Japanese, Melissa? I don't if it's any different from what it is in the English.
About carrying the turtle?
Yeah, and not wanting to, because her reason in English is very stupid.
Yeah, what is it again?
She just says that they're on an adventure, so they don't have time. Which is like, what?
That's the whole point of adventures, is to do so many side quests.
Yeah, Bulma has played adventure games in a way that would set my teeth on edge, where she just goes through the main story campaign and any additional, like, quest icons over someone's head she just ignores.
Who needs grinding when you've got skills?
I think she's just focused on finding the Dragon Balls.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's very much, this is a waste of time, which, rude. she doesn't want to spend time with the turtle.
And then we get the sort of, like, back and forth of, like, all right, I'll carry the turtle to the sea and you can just wait here at camp. And, you know, Bulma's like, fine, I'll wait at camp. And then a bunch of scary Dragon Ball megafauna just start prowling around everywhere. And she's like, hi, Goku.
I don't want to wait at camp.
I would like to not wait at camp anymore.
She, in the Japanese, they end their argument with Bulma saying, if you go, I never want to see you again.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, wow.
And, to which Goku responds by picking up the turtle and leaving. and Bulma yells, don't come back. And then she stands there for a minute, mumbling to herself, and then says, he has one of the Dragon Balls.
I need one of those.
And then shit. Watches the dinosaurs stomp by and then is on her way.
Any final thoughts for episode 2?
There's a amusing exchange towards the end while Bulma's getting ready, which in the Japanese, while she's blow drying her hair, she does say that if Goku comes in there, she's gonna call the cops. But I guess throughout this, Goku isn't using her name. He's using omae, which is a kind of rude way of saying you.
Oh.
I mean, it's just very familiar, casual.
It's like, oh, you don't know me like that.
Yeah, and so Bulma says, stop referring to me as omae. I'm older than you. call me Bulma-san. And Goku says, no, it's hard to say.
That does kind of sound hard to say.
I guess the honorific system would be hard to learn to navigate if you've only ever had to deal with one person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bulma Buruma is...
Mm-hmm. Just a mouthful in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would also mean that Grandpa Gohan was just talking the rudest honorifics in the hills.
The more we learn about Goku, the more it makes sense that this man lived alone in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Before having a Goku.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you wouldn't, if you're living with your grandson in the woods, you wouldn't necessarily use the highest honorifics. You know, I mean, I guess
Gohan-sama.
Right. I mean, yeah. There's being polite to your grandpa, but if it's just grandpa and you in the woods, I don't know. Maybe not so much.
Episode 3 is The Nimbus Cloud of Roshi.
The Japanese title roughly translates to The Turtle Hermit's Kintoon.
Hmm. We open up with everyone heading out to the sea, which is only 2 miles away.
Covered a lot of ground in the interim.
Yeah.
100 miles, that's a long way, even if you're on a motorbike.
Yeah, it's at least a couple of hours, depending on the motorbike, I guess. They run afoul of a scary bear bandit who wants that turtle to eat because humans give him heartburn. Goku fights him, he pulls out a big scimitar sword, and Goku dodges a bunch. He's having a wonderful time.
He just loves fighting. When he was fighting the wolves and fighting this guy, he's just got a big old smile.
Yeah, he's just giggling. Goku hops onto the bear's muzzle and socks it right between the eyes. K.O.
They
speed onward towards the sea.
There's a spurt of blood out of that punch.
Yeah, didn't like that. Before we see the establishing shot of the ocean, we see this sort of creepy shy guy lemur clinging to a palm tree.
Just Toriyama.
Yeah, it's Toriyama's self-insert as a lemur.
Little robot face guy with his little claw.
And like the gas mask.
And the red hoodie, yeah.
Yeah.
He's just hanging out up there.
Yeah. Making weird noises.
As manga artists are wont to do.
Yeah. Turtle thanks Goku for bringing him to the sea. Goku is super excited to see the sea. He loves it. Crabs, sand, waves. And he also says that Turtle has a gift to thank Goku with.
I love this moment for Goku. Like, the feeling of getting to see the sea. Like, I wish I could remember seeing the sea for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But like that feeling of like the world opening up, especially if you've lived in a forest environment and then suddenly being able to see that far,
right?
Like it speaks a lot about like Goku's later character, about like how he seeks adventures and like seeking the world getting ever expanded and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense, that actually, because he's
experience for him
so flabbergasted because he never even thought something like this existed.
Mm-hmm.
He just kind of thought all water was like rivers and maybe lakes. Turtle goes swimming away to go get a lovely gift for Goku, and we cut to Pilaf daydreaming about conquering the world, riding on a magnificent white stallion with a brilliant crown and everyone bowing to him.
Oh, this was a daydream?
I thought.
I just thought it was like, because I had been wondering, like, what is he the emperor of? Does he have any other subjects? He's got Mai and Shu and a
lost castle.
Spy. Yeah, he's got a castle and, like, the lost spy helicopter what saw the wolf eyes.
Yeah.
It's never very clear what he is emperor of, or if that's just what he calls himself.
It might be a self-given title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shu and Mai turn up to him empty-handed. And Pilaf gets quite mad, quite cross. But then suddenly, a tip comes in on the hotline. The hotline, in this case, is a wind-up robot lizard thing with a telephone.
I kind of wish that my phone had that capability to, like, wander closer to me when it was ringing. Because I tend to leave it in other rooms and forget about it.
Just sprouts little legs and... Hey! Phone for you. Turns out that a Dragon Ball was found in possession of an old hermit named Rushi.
How did they get this info?
From who?
Yeah.
Are they just like phoning old men, like a scam phone call, and like just asking, like, you don't happen to have any cool round glowy orbs,
ancient
with stars
artifacts,
in them, huh?
Some creature on the beach is a narc.
I don't know who the fuck that is.
Alligator. It was that gator. Is the sunbathing gator. Has it out for Roshi. Wants that house for himself. Pilaf demands to come with Shu and Mai on this execution, or this excursion. And they all cram into the spy plane, which does not seat three comfortably. Goku spots Turtle returning, but this time he's got a dude on his back. Hey! He's an old guy with a bald head and sunglasses and a cool alphabet shirt and a shell on his back, and his name is Roshi.
Friendly-looking old man.
Friendly, absolutely nothing untoward.
Very, very kind.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
He just seems so cool. Like, in terms of, like, the old man who shepherds the hero onto his path. Like, this is definitely the coolest one that I can think of. Obi-Wan's got nothing on his style.
I don't mind this Gandalf. Roshi says to thank Goku he will summon a magic carpet. But it doesn't arrive because it turns out the carpet was at the cleaners.
He never gets that carpet back.
In the Japanese version, he calls for a phoenix.
Ah!
To which the turtle reminds him the phoenix died last year of food poisoning.
Oh no!
Oh, no!
They're weak to food poisoning!
I know. And so there goes Goku's gift of eternal life.
Oh no!
Darn.
I feel like Goku made it out alright in the end.
Yeah.
He did okay.
Instead, Roshi decides to summon the Flying Nimbus, or in Japanese, the Kintoun. He says, if you can ride it, it's yours. A little magic yellow bit of cloud comes puttering along.
Goku immediately tries to eat it. Or asks politely if he can eat it.
I wonder if this was a curiosity that he kept with him into adulthood when he finally feasted on some snake way clouds.
You know it is.
So, Roshi says that only those of pure heart can ride the Nimbus and tries to give a demonstration by hopping on and falling right through.
Uh-oh.
Mm-mm. Turtle says,
Harbinger.
You must be doing something naughty. But Goku hops on the cloud with no problem. And he's so happy.
Because his heart is pure evil.
it is pure. We did not establish in what direction. It just is pure.
Pure fight. Pure hunger.
Yes. Pure train. Pure training.
After commercial, we cut to the Pilaf gang flying around. They spot the iconic Kame House on an island, and they half crash land next to it. They approach the house and attempt to break in with Pilaf's quote-unquote universal key, which does not work.
Who gave this fool a sonic screwdriver?
Yeah.
What?
What? It did work. I guess it's different. It did work, it's just it was already unlocked.
Oh.
So he locks it.
Okay.
when he uses his key.
In the dub, it was just like it didn't budge after, so maybe like the key just was a dud or something.
Oh, yeah. He uses the key, but in doing so locks the door that was already open.
Yeah. Is it a one-use key?
I don't know. Maybe? It seemed to, like, magically fold out to the exact dimensions as soon as it popped out of the little, like, Swiss Army knife handle. But that's okay, because the window was open this whole time.
Yeah.
And this was a useless exchange. I didn't mind it. Also, that makes perfect sense. Why the fuck would you lock your house if you're on an island surrounded by hundreds of miles of ocean?
Yeah.
Guarded Who's by breaking an alligator.
In? Yeah.
Yeah.
And what would they steal? Is workout DVDs?
They've already got magazines. Those copies. We cut back to Goku soaring above the sea on his Nimbus. He's just having such a wonderful time. Sorry, I've been reading so much One Piece that I got worried of him falling into the ocean. But it's okay, because Goku did not eat a devil fruit.
That boy can swim.
He can swim just fine. Bulma would also like a gift, but Turtle's like, nope, she didn't help. Just the kid, just the boy. But Roshi is willing to offer a gift in exchange for a peek at Bulma's undies. Hmm. Welcome back to the bucket. Bulma.
F1, gotta turn it over already.
Yeah.
Gotta bail it out.
Yeah, hang on. Bulma, embarrassed, obliges, and apparently forgetting that she was going commando this whole time, just flashes full crotch at Roshi.
Oh, this makes me so uncomfortable, because she's also just, like, out in her pajamas.
Yeah, just, like, still doesn't notice somehow.
Yeah.
No ocean breeze or anything.
So, this sucks and is gross. Yoshi gets an anime bloody nose.
Maybe she has spine issues. Decreased sensitivity.
Could be. Who knows? It's at this point. So, also, Bulma wanted a gift but didn't know what to ask for until after she had flashed her crotch.
Right.
So, she just wanted a like, something cool. She just wanted the treasure.
She's like out on the adventure like, well, wow, I guess this is time to use my feminine wiles. Giddy with power.
I mean, this is also the first thing that she offered Goku, so not out of the question, I suppose.
That's true. And she did kind of shout triumphantly, ta-da! When... So, yeah.
It's complicated. It's a complicated ick.
It is a complicated ick. That is Dragon Ball in a nutshell, huh?
Do you want to know how they got around it on Toonami?
Oh, please.
Yeah, how did they?
Because they did have to maintain this plot point somehow to keep the flow of the episode going.
Right.
So instead, Roshi asks to see her belly button like the cute pop stars on the TV.
That's almost worse.
It almost makes it weirder.
No, that's way weirder, yeah. Though.
For an old man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see your heso. That's strange. That definitely ignited something in someone's heart who later went on to DeviantArt. It's like, what is it about belly buttons that's so important? So, at this point, Bulma realizes that Roshi's necklace this whole time has been the 3-star Dragon Ball, so she trades for that. After some negotiation. And by negotiation, I mean she, like, flashes her crotch, like, 3 more times in rapid succession.
Mm-hmm. And that's the clip that they use on Toonami, because that's easier to edit around.
Ah, gotcha. So, they get back home. Goku and Bulma return to their little capsule camp. And this is where Bulma realizes her undies are on the floor and she's been going commando this whole time.
Hmm.
And Bulma, after finding out that Goku...
Despite riding a motorcycle there and back.
There and back.
In a dress.
Yeah. In a dress. Yeah.
That's a good
point. In her pajamas.
You know, this gave me head... Little disability Bulma headcanon. Decreased sensitivity in lower body.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Sure.
And upon finding out that Goku had disrobed her while she slumbered, she unloads a machine gun into Goku's face.
And it's very funny.
And it's just a fun little goof. Little pellets.
I like the idea that for Goku, a machine gun is like a little spray bottle for a cat who gets up on the counter. Goku, no.
No, I mean practically.
Down
away
Goku.
From the Monstera plant. Back at Calming House, the Pilaf gang ransacks the place only to find no Dragon Ball.
Just porn.
Just porn and a sunbathing gator outside, whom they hold at knife point.
Who the fuck is this?
Someone we never see again.
Why is he
well,
not
I would move
for
out of that.
Ball Z?
I would move out of that neighborhood if that happened to me while I was sunbathing on the beach.
That's fair.
He's like, I'm out. Deuces.
Mm-hmm.
My headcanon is that whoever the fuck this is tricked Turtle into getting lost so that he could take his spot at Kame House.
Be the Kame House reptile.
Yeah.
Well, that won't work. It's Kame House, not Wani House.
He was getting name. He was ordering paint.
Hmm, that's fair.
It was being shipped.
Yeah.
Getting ready for Gator House.
Welcome to Gator House. That is absolutely.
That's a that house is... that has tub line.
Oh, I was gonna paint it as like a Guy Fieri bar and grill with like a Cajun flair.
That does not exclude tub line.
That does not.
We can have both. Gator House, bar, grill, and tub wine. Roshi shows up and Pilaf demands to know where the Dragon Ball is. Roshi fills them in, and Pilaf and company, well, Pilaf specifically, is just being a real jerk about everything. They hop into the Pilaf plane, which turns into like a submarine thing, and ask for Roshi to give them a push into the ocean. But again, Pilaf's
happy
being
to
a real
oblige.
Jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pilaf's being a real jerk about it, and Roshi's like, whatever, just anything to get you off of my island. And he gently pushes the boat off into the sea.
After gently poking a hole in the side.
Yep.
What is it made out of?
Tin.
Is it paper mache?
We have to understand, Melissa, that Roshi is very strong.
Yeah.
All
right. I believe this stretch of the imagination. I think Roshi could, with his little wooden staff and enough force, like, puncture a little hole in a spy plane.
That honestly did not enter my brain as a possibility.
Yeah, he's real buff. We'll see how buff
he is. We don't know
on.
That yet.
Yeah, it's we true. Don't yet know that.
We don't know
this
that yet.
This is foreshadowing.
I'm sorry. Yes,
you're
subtle
right, you're foreshadowing.
Right. This is Z-Mark.
Z-Mark, yes. He's kind of strong, this guy.
Literally just thought their ship was shitty.
I mean, it's probably a healthy dose of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a perfect storm.
So, Bulma poofs away the capsule house and attempts to ride the Nimbus only to fall through. Oh, darn. She's not pure of heart.
She's in the Japanese version. She says, is being so beautiful a sin?
I love that.
Oh, it's the absolute horn dog energy you had while watching that couple on the TV, Bulma.
Yeah.
We saw your drool.
Yeah, you had drool and hard eyes. We know what's up. And the episode ends with the two riding off into the horizon while the Pilaf gang sink to the bottom of the sea. Guess Pilaf's dead now, thank God.
Thank God.
All right.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P. Pilaf. Any final thoughts on episode 3 or any of the episodes we encounter today?
overall a fun time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some yucky bumps in the road, but, like, I enjoy this show setting the stakes as, like, it's a globe-spanning adventure. No one can fly yet, so everyone has to, like, take the cloud or drive around everywhere.
It was really enjoyable in middle school when, like, this was the kind of humor that everything you read had, and it's like, oh,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm,
this mm-hmm. is just what humor is.
Yeah.
It is a relic of its age.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I will just say, prepare for yuckier bumps to come.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Get the bucket ready.
We are gonna need a much bigger bucket, Jason.
Oh no.
We just, at the end of every episode, we just ritually prepare the bucket for next episode.
Yeah, just empty it out. Mm-hmm. The yuck bucket. The yuck it. Ah. It's good to be back, baby. I don't think, normally at the end of this week, there's like a Hail Satan that we like to mm-hmm. do, where we check in on Mr. Satan, but I don't know if he's born yet.
He is baby.
He's
baby.
How old
I mean,
is
like
he?
He's, Satan.
He is roughly the same age as Goku.
Oh, okay.
They are contemporaries.
Satan babies, making your dreams come true. So he's just a little baby Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mean,
my favorite character isn't even in this show at any point.
Right. I would take Mark as like a city boy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's definitely raised on pro wrestling, TV, you know.
Seems like a latchkey kid.
Definite mm-hmm. latchkey kid energy. Like mom and dad both work.
He's going to public school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Going home, making like
Orange Star Elementary.
Middle school. If he's 14, like Goku.
Yeah, he would be in middle school.
Yeah, go home, make that instant ramen.
Oh yeah, go home and yeah, get that Nissin cup noodle. How I wonder. We mention and joke and are so goofy with mirth about how. Mr. Satan's first wife, one Beelza Barbara, mm-hmm. and mother mm-hmm. of Adele.
Mm-hmm.
How old do you think they were when they met? Are they young lovers? Are they the high school couple that made it all the way to adulthood? Or did they meet it later
on?
Well,
they definitely didn't do that.
Mm.
We know as much, being divorcees.
They made it to somewhere in there.
Maybe they travel that rarely traveled path of enemies to lovers to divorcees.
to remembering why they were enemies.
Enemies to slightly different enemies.
The YA novels I read always stop before that point.
Strange.
How about that?
I think that's some loam we could explore next time.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I do have a 4-star reading for you.
Oh boy.
It's the classic. Oh, I missed the 4-star reading, even though I do the One Piece version of it every week.
But it's not a 4-star reading. Largely the same.
It is pretty much the same.
That's a 5-star reading. A...
yeah. Yeah. So this week, we're going to be talking about... We don't really have a lot of characters to go off of right now. But I will go with one of them, and her name is Bulma.
Hey!
With a canonical birthday of August 18th, making her a Leo.
Okay, yeah, she's a Leo.
Yeah.
One of our few canon birthdays.
Yeah. Brave, bold, loves the spotlight.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bulma, this is your reading. An unexpected raise could have you feeling especially generous. Your gifts will be appreciated, but take care that you don't wipe out all that you've gained. Romantic ideals could permeate your consciousness, and you'll be thinking wonderful thoughts about a passionate encounter with your love partner. Go for it. Hang on to the memory for days and weeks to come.
Very
go wish for that boyfriend.
There's the forward momentum of the whole series for you.
Well, I wish Dave was here to get a soft migraine from.
Don't worry, Jason. He is somewhere.
Somewhere out in the wilds of New Jersey. Just I sense something amiss.
Hey, Dave, get some water. Take care of yourself.
Get some ibuprofen.
Drink some water, take an ibuprofen, and just drown out the stars.
That's the grimmest fucking phrase I've ever heard, Tyler. That's some Bloodborne shit.
I want to read a Cthulhu Mythos hero who just does that.
Just the phrase, drown out the stars. Oh. Thank you all for listening. I appreciate everyone who tunes in every week. We're going to be recording this every other week whilst our sister podcast Piecemeal goes every week, and we're going to be building up quite a buffer before we launch this little series.
Yeah, so currently we have no idea when you're listening to this.
No clue. This is probably next year, actually. So
sometime in 2022.
So I hope you had a good holiday. Hope you stayed nice and warm and safe and had some good food and
hopefully
good times.
No natural disaster has rocked the globe again.
Hopefully.
But if it has, I'm glad you're listening to our show.
Yeah, we weathered
the last
one. I'm glad
you can find joy still.
We weathered the last one. Yeah, I think I picked possibly the worst quarantine hobby. in a whole year of isolation from the outside world, I spent 52 weeks recapping Dragon Ball GT.
It's good for the soul. Builds character.
And hopefully now we can temper some of that with some Dragon Ball. And
some potty jokes.
Some potty jokes. Yeah.
It was an exfoliating experience.
Yes. If you like this show, oh fuck, how do I end this? It's been so long. If you like this show, please be sure to give it a 4-star rating on your podcast service of choice. Leave us lovely reviews and comments. Email us at destructodiscourse@gmail.com and tweet at us at destructo _ disc, DISC.
That's the one.
It's all coming back to me. And you can join our Discord at the pinned tweet at the top of our Twitter page, where you can hang out with the rest of us. And a lot of us right now are talking about Piecemeal and One Piece, but there's Dragon Ball stuff too. Plenty of that, of course. Oh, right, individual call-offs. Yes. Melissa, where can we find you on the internet?
Hey, I am Kristaia, KRISTAIA, on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I would make excuses about not posting things, but I don't know when this is going live, so
there
maybe
might be
I'm posting
new things.
Maybe yeah. I'm posting stuff. I have a puppy.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned.
There you go. Yeah.
Thea?
I live in the woods. But I do bathe.
Thank God.
I also occasionally make my way to the big city of Dayton, Ohio, to do improvised comedy at the Dayton Black Box Improv Theater on Thursdays and occasionally Fridays and Saturdays.
Nice. Tyler, how about you?
You can listen to my other podcasts, which are What the Folklore, where myself and my two friends read and make fun of fairy tales from around the world, and have been doing so for a number of years now. So there is quite a backlog if you're interested.
Mm-hmm.
And as Jason mentioned, I'm also hosting Piecemeal, which is a One Piece book club podcast where we are reading one volume of the famously ongoing manga One Piece every week until we catch up. So far, as of this recording, we are at volume 33 out of 100.
Don't take me like this. No.
Already like a third of the way through.
That is wild, actually.
Hey, I've been busy and haven't been able to record, so I'm just reading, y'all. I'm on 36.
How's it going? How you feeling about it?
I'm going.
I am going.
Yeah. So stay tuned, folks at home. This is a very shonen boy protagonist laden experience in the podcast cinematic universe.
Sometimes your life just takes weird twists. Mm-hmm. And you spend all of your life watching shoujo stuff, and then suddenly you do a bunch of shonen podcasts.
Many, many twists in this beautiful river of life, and we mm-hmm. thank you, listeners, for joining us on it. I think, is that it? Then we do call-offs? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did it.
Oh, wait!
Did you do yours?
I didn't. Shit, you can find me on Twitch. I'm JCalves. JAYCALVES. I stream whenever I feel like it, usually Wednesday evenings, but also whenever I feel like it. And then that name also takes you to various other social medias that I barely update, such as Twitch and Instagram. And I said Twitch already, I meant Twitter.
The other T.
Oh shit. There's gonna be like a third one that becomes super popular called like Twitcher.
It's called Meta.
It's gonna be a fucking nightmare. Ah, nope.
Soon to be found on Meta.
No.
Hopefully that joke ages well.
Hopefully.
Like a fine milk.
This has been Destructor Discourse. Please empty the bucket.
Shit, we're using that one. That one's really good.
My buddy from play school.